comes to the future of creating products for digital consumers, you can no longer think of creating a product as a standalone island. From now on, they've got to be able to work within a digital ecosystem. They have to have some form of connectivity, some form of intelligence.
That's Tim Beharin, principal analyst with Silicon Valley-based Creative Strategies. Today on PodTech News, we'll get an inside look at how analysts predict technology trends and hear what's on Tim Beharin's watch list for the 2007 Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, which kicks off on Saturday. I'm Catherine Girardeau, PodTech News. Analyst Tim Beharin is known as a particularly accurate predictor of future technology trends. He's credited with predicting the desktop publishing revolution 3 years before it hit the market, and also saw that multimedia would be a major trend as early as 1984. To start our interview, I asked him how much of the art of trend prediction is research and how much is intuition, that combination of background, educated guesswork, and prophecy known as the hunch.
Well, we also cheat. Being an analyst, and especially one that's been around here for so long, I have privilege of being able to see stuff in labs and stuff that's going on. In fact, historically, the reason I was and made that desktop publishing prediction is Canon showed me the original desktop laser engines 2 or 3 years before I made that prediction. And, you know, once you start seeing where the technology is heading and you eventually put two and two together, you at least can come up to what I consider a logical projection of what it could do, where it could go, and what its potential is.
How much do the people behind these companies play into your predictions, if at all? I mean, I know you're predicting technology trends and what devices are going to do and so on, but how much do the personnel at these companies and turnover and stuff come into your predictions?
Well, they're a part of it. I mean, for example, when we saw Yahoo early on, Jerry Yang and his partner had this amazing level, not of only intelligence, but great enthusiasm. And the fact is that that was drawing attention from the big guys. And when you put all of that together, you know, it became relatively clear that while we may not have understood where they were going, they had energy, contacts, potential financial backing, which at the time I saw them, they didn't have, but they were attracting VC interest. And, you know, at that point, you begin to realize that they were onto something. But in the end, for example, we saw the laser engines from Canon 3 years ahead of time, but it took Apple to put it together in a package and actually make it a real significant market. Whereas when we saw it from Canon, while we thought what Canon was doing was interesting, we were somewhat reluctant to predict that Canon had the marketing skills and the ability to actually pull it off as a company by itself. And as I said, Apple was the one who finally packaged all of it together and put it around desktop publishing to make, the laser printer, a desktop experience.
And that probably had quite a bit to do with Apple's culture and Steve Jobs driving it.
Absolutely. Steve was very adamant about certain aspects of that in those days. And while he actually wasn't predicting, even internally, a desktop publishing, and he'll tell you, you know, that his own interest in calligraphy and design and fonts and images were a key part of his thinking about the importance of being able to take that experience and make it more electronic. And when Adobe showed him PostScript, for example, it became really clear to him that that was a critical issue as well. And he puts all of the pieces together. He was also shown Aldus's PageMaker simultaneously and ended up with what in essence started the desktop publishing revolution.
Let's turn to your current crystal ball here. You've recently published an article on technologypundits.com about your predictions for what's going to be hot at the big consumer electronics show in Las Vegas in January and also some of the underlying trends. So let's first talk about some of the specific products or product categories that you think are going to be hot over the next 2 years.
The big question is, why is Apple so amazingly successful with their iPod? And the simple answer to that, in a sense, is because Apple actually provides a complete end-to-end solution and what we call a digital ecosystem. They create a really simple approach to accessing your music and video and pictures, creating them in some cases, syncing them together, managing it on the PC, and then putting them on a mobile device, a la the iPod. And in the last year, we've been, as researchers, have been getting a lot of questions about this question, what makes Apple different than others and why are they successful? And as we do that, we're constantly drilling down to this issue of the digital ecosystem and the way Apple looks at it. You know, some people in the industry think of Apple's ecosystem as a walled garden, but in reality, they use a lot of industry standard technology and they just package it together in such a way that they create a complete solution that typical of Apple is real easy to use and manage, and more importantly, just works. Well, what we are seeing now is a evolution of that concept towards a broader industry approach. And one of my messages will be, when it comes to the future of creating products for digital consumers, you can no longer think of creating a product as a standalone island. From now on, they've got to be able to work within a digital ecosystem. They have to have some form of connectivity, some form of intelligence. Going into the future, a personal computer or a CE device or communications device, etc., have got to understand what a digital ecosystem is that they can fit into and begin creating what we call end-to-end solutions as a part of their total program. So one of the things that you'll see at CES this year is more of this activity on companies creating connected devices that are smarter and more intelligent and have that focus on how do they fit into a digital ecosystem.
Do you think there's going to be much of a push for interoperability between these digital ecosystems? Because, I mean, the walled garden camp is critical of the fact that you've got to completely commit to the Apple ecosystem if you want to use your iPod with anything else.
Yeah, that'll be a point of interest and contention and debate for, I think, quite a while. You know, if you look at Apple's model, you can't necessarily complain about it because it not only works, it's been highly successful. And the competitors are actually trying to do something similar, and the most viable, the most noted one there is, of course, Microsoft by, you know, dumping their own DRM and going to a new DRM to work within the Zune architecture. But ultimately, I actually think a more open approach is probably the better way to approach this problem. And it'll be interesting to see how standards evolve and how other companies are able to create a broader open system in order to try to break Apple's position right now.
Let's talk just about a couple other trends. One is the Gen X and Gen Y. The younger generations want products that are cool. Obviously, Apple kind of fits into feeding that. What else are we going to see in terms of companies trying to market to these younger demographics?
There will be a lot more over time. They're only now just starting to understand this. It turns out that Gen Y, which is what we call millennials, or ages 14 to 24, is the first major generation that has known nothing but digital. You know, Gen X started out in an analog world and eventually became digital by the time, you know, they got into college or, you know, went off into their careers. In Gen Y's case, and Ben's a good example, even though he's 28, he's a little bit older than that demographic, he's pretty much only lived with digital technology all of his life. And as a result of that, kids' expectations are different. This is one of the most influential groups in the sense of their adoption of technology, and it's becoming much clearer that if you want the attention of these kids, you not only have to create products that they want, but it's also got to be cool. And that's where you're looking at products this year, and we'll be especially looking at stuff that is more in line with customization, meaning that I have to create products that kids not only want, but can make look the way they want it to look is a critical issue as well. And that could be anything from custom paint jobs on laptops to, you know, what you might call skins or tattoos that you put on laptops or handheld devices to make them more personal.
Do you have any other predictions for surprises at the CES show? I'm thinking about now the keynotes. You've said Vista is likely to be the center of Bill Gates' keynote. What do you think Ed Zand, Motorola's CEO, might focus on?
My suspicion is that he'll also push hard on the role of the cell phone as the center of personal experiences. Again, going back to that mass customization, personalization standpoint, Motorola, as are most of the handset guys, very interested in the evolution of the cell phone from where it is has been in the past, which is more of a communications device, to one that will be more multimedia and communications mixed. And so I think he'll probably have two messages. One will be in the context of making phones look cooler, giving them their more functionality, and probably fitting how they better fit into digital ecosystems, work with how they connect with PCs, how they interconnect with your television, things of that nature. And then because Motorola also owns General Instruments, I will expect him to show us some of the stuff that's going on their digital set-top box initiatives and their whole home models as well.
And any predictions for John Chambers of Cisco's talk?
Well, he's going to basically focus on the fact that the network is the center of our universe going forward. You know, they have a lot to gain by being at the back end, providing all of the equipment and technology. But because he's speaking at a CES show, I'm sure he's going to be emphasizing everything from what they announced yesterday, which is, you know, the iPhone BOIP phone, to what they did in buying Scientific Atlantic and consumer front ends, as well as what they're doing in wireless with their Linksys acquisition. The one other thing that we believe will be a very big piece of this CES will be what we call whole home media distribution. How do you take the content on your PC and move it to other parts of the house?
Tim Beharin is principal analyst with Silicon Valley-based Creative Strategies. For those of you headed to Las Vegas next week, Tim Beharin's super session at CES, Understanding Consumer Digital Ecosystems, will be held January 8th at 10:30 a.m. at the Las Vegas Convention Center. In San Francisco, I'm Catherine Girardeau, PodTech News. Happy New Year.